This podcast is supported by the new Porsche Panamera. When you follow the crowd, you lose something that few possess. Originality. By forging your own path and embracing the unknown, living fearlessly, without limits or reservations, and trusting your instincts, you'll chart a brave new course of your own. The new Porsche Panamera. Choose boldly.
Hey everyone, it's Estelle Herndon, political reporter for the New York Times. When I became a journalist, I made a promise to my readers, like the way the doctors take an oath to their patients. I committed to bringing the truth to light, no matter which party, business, organization, or person I'm reporting on. I have to be persistent, I have to do research, and I have to push back when someone tries to hide or spin the facts. And I know I'm going to write stories that both Democrats and Republicans don't like. But that's what the New York Times has been doing for more than a century, and that's what we're going to keep doing. We believe the public deserves the right to make up their mind based on the facts. So if you want to support this kind of work, you can subscribe to the New York Times at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Welcome back to The Choice from the New York Times opinion section. I'm Katie Kingsbury, and I oversee the Times editorial board. Last episode, you heard the board question Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren about her economic plan. In this episode, we're bringing you what the board thought of her visit. If you haven't had a chance to hear the Warren interview yet, go listen to that first. Joining me today to talk about Senator Warren's visit and the economic proposals in this Democratic primary is editorial board member Binyamin Applebaum.
My name is Binya Applebaum, and I write about economics and business for the editorial board.
Before we dig into policy, let's take a listen to what the board had to say after Senator Warren left the room.
I thought when she answered the question about the UAW that you asked and all that, and sort of, and even when she talks about all the working families that she's been studying all her life, did she talk to them? I sort of sometimes felt she was looking at all this a little bit from the side and was being just a touch put offish in the way she had addressed some of the questions, which may be a strength. Maybe that's
not a strength. It's not.
No, that's part of it. That's part of the problem.
Well, Obama did that too, and it didn't hurt him.
Do I have to explain the
difference
to you?
Professor of Harvard Law School, but maybe not Harvard Law School.
Do you know who doesn't like to be lectured by powerful women?
Male voters. Not that that's fair, but it is what it is.
She said male voters don't like to be lectured by
One of my questions that we didn't get to was that there are these two dynamics happening in this race, and I think they happen in politics generally, but we have poll numbers for this race.
That was actually the question I was teeing
up
for.
Sorry, it's fun.
So there's this one trend where 70-some-odd% of voters say they would be excited to vote for a woman for president, much more than excitement for voting for a white man. But then you look at the likability numbers for the actual women who have been in this race, and they're in the single digits.
Well, that's always the
single.
I vote for a woman, but I'm not going to vote
for that one, right? Exactly.
Yeah. So if that, we could just get this.
It's a tale as old as time, and it's still at play today. And I think we would be remiss to not remember that it is a factor here for sure.
The flip side of that is there is a ineluctability. There's also an excitement issue. With you're going to motivate people to come out against, you're going to motivate people to come out for. I mean, so it doesn't cut one way or the other very cleanly.
A woman came within a whisker of being elected president, and part
it's
of the
true.
You know,
a woman actually was elected.
She was
president.
Elected. I know this line.
Like but part of the case here is that Warren has a message that is a little bit more attuned to the concerns of the voters who failed to come over to Hillary's side. Right. It's an economic populism that was not in Clinton's campaign platform.
Right.
She's
right.
doing badly her in those swing states, isn't she?
Well, but I mean,
I think these are legitimate questions,
I mean, like,
but that, the case for her is that
wrong,
if you're a Michigan
been...
voter who went for Trump, I'm not at all convinced that was primarily about racism. I think it was about an identification with their economic interest, and this may be a message that they
find
more
appealing. But I actually think one of the... I think it actually goes back to Brent's point about rhetoric, which is her rhetoric... Trumpian enough to break through.
So totally different.
It's way better than Clinton's was.
It's very different, yeah.
It's just another universe from Clinton's. She speaks so much more directly.
I agree with Mara that she has fundamentally has a political problem.
You know, if you got the chops, you can adjust what you're saying. If you got the rhetorical chops, you can change the impression of what you're saying without changing the substance at all.
And the primary is different than the general.
Right. Yeah. That's a big deal.
Binya, what did you make of the conversation with Senator Warren?
She is a very impressive person. She speaks clearly and cogently about her sense of what is wrong with the country and what opportunities the country has. She is very good at delineating clear plans to address those issues. She's thoughtful. She's responsive. She's a politician, so, you know, you don't get all of your questions answered, but she comes across very impressively.
One of the things that has been very remarkable to me in this campaign, and you and I have both covered Warren for a decade now, is that when she first emerged on the Washington stage, she was really a citizen politician. She came at problems in a pragmatic way and was up for any solution, whereas she has really, I guess it's in competition with Bernie Sanders, locked herself into certain ideological positions in this campaign and has been pretty rigid about them in a way that I hadn't really seen her do in the past as a senator. And I'm curious if you feel that way, too.
Yeah, you know, when I first met Elizabeth Warren, it was during the financial crisis years, and she was this fascinating figure in Washington. She was this, you know, incredibly smart person who was looking at this incredibly broken system and saying, hey, people, listen to reason. We can fix this. We just need to apply some common sense to these problems. And it was incredibly refreshing. And in many respects, she was absolutely right. And she sort of, you know, came down to Washington and blew through the city, you know, lecturing people on how to run the government better. It was sort of the idealized version of what every expert hopes they can do is, you know, come down to Washington, apply their expertise, convince the politicians to listen and actually make progress on real problems. It was impressive to watch. It was exciting to watch. It was fascinating to watch. And then she began to evolve. She wanted to become not just an expert who brought her own ideas, but a politician who was, you know, in charge of representing people and rallying support. And, you know, that's a transition that I think, you know, she has, in some respects, done very well. She's, you know, won elections. She's a senator. And in other respects, she's continued to struggle with sort of how you do that, how you articulate a platform and get people to rally around it. And it has. It is a very different role than the role she played initially, and probably not as comfortable for her or as natural for her. But it offers her the opportunity, if she can pull it off, to make change across a much broader waterfront. And that, I'm sure, is the appeal for her.
Is what Senator Warren is proposing radical?
Radical is a big word. She is certainly proposing a significant shift on many dimensions of policy. You know, she takes very seriously the idea that much about the way this country is run and operates is broken, and that we need to make big changes in order to get back to where we want to be. You know, she thinks that Americans don't have enough access to opportunity, that there's too much inequality in the distribution of economic output, that people are unable basically to live out the American dream, and that if we want to restore that ability to average Americans, we need to make big changes in the way that, in particular, the economy operates.
So my concern with this remains. She is scaring people, and she needs to find a better way to engage with the people that she's scaring other than pitch it as, boy, you're just going to be a defeatist. You can't tell people that they are wrong to be frightened when you're threatening to take away their Medicare. And I do think this is something she's going to have to work on if she's going to win over.
But why do you think that she scares people? Is it really just the policies?
Well, her policies are not popular.
I mean, the Medicare policy is not popular.
She is having a little bit of trouble since she rolled it out. But I'm just saying, if you're just thinking that this in terms of her policies are off-putting to some people, she can't respond to that with the, oh, you're just afraid of change, or, oh, you're just not a fighter.
I think one of the other things that's remarkable is something like, for instance, Medicare for All doesn't have the popular support behind it right now.
Medicare for All is a really interesting thing because it's a catchphrase to start with. What it means varies by who's speaking, and Warren has certainly been more detailed than many of the people who use that phrase in describing what she means by it. But yeah, there are ideas she has that command broad popular support in the abstract, although one wonders how sustainable that support is if she starts to explain what she means or to, you know, actually bring it into the cauldron of Congress. But Medicare for All is an example of an idea that she's been fairly detailed about, and it still has not particularly attracted public support. There's a core group of liberal voters for whom that's almost a litmus test for a candidate. But for many Democrats, and all the more so for moderates, independents, the idea seems scary and an unnecessary solution to a real problem. And I think, you know, one of her challenges, she sort of faced a fork in the road where she could either, you know, double down on, you know, Bernie Sanders approach to healthcare and try to establish her liberal bona fides and convince voters to come after her. And she tried that, and it hasn't seemed to work out too well. And now she's trying to walk back to that fork and take the other branch where, you know, she advocates. She says, basically, we still want to get to that point, but we're going to pursue it through a set of smaller steps, which is an approach a lot of the other candidates have embraced as well.
I worry about some of her political instincts, though. We saw the whole snafu with the Native American tribes at the start of her campaign. And then we saw her present the details on Medicare for All and have to back away from some of those details because it wasn't well received.
The Medicare for All plan seems like a clear miscalculation. You know, she went down, you know, the wrong fork in the road and it was not a good choice. And I think you're right. I mean, it has to raise questions about her political judgment. While I have large misgivings about the length of American political campaigns, one thing it does give us the opportunity to do is to watch the candidates perform over an extended period of time. And that performance becomes the test of their candidacy. And, you know, when a candidate stumbles in the way that Warren did, misjudges an issue and the electorate, I mean, it clearly is a mark against them. It clearly raises questions about them. The other side of the ledger is, you know, she has risen. This was an incredibly crowded field with a lot of very impressive people in it. And out of that crowded field, you know, Warren has climbed the furthest. You know, Bernie Sanders, Joe Biden, they entered the races with established bases of support. Warren entered the race with, you know, very little national support and has essentially through, you know, the force of her political ability and her ideas, you know, assembled a pretty considerable chunk of support. Maybe insufficient, maybe it's peaked, I don't know. But, you know, I think one needs to credit her political achievements as well as mark against her political miscues.
More from our deliberations after a quick break.
Over the last 25 years, the world has witnessed incredible progress, from dial-up modems to 5G connectivity, from massive PC towers to AI-enabled microchips. Innovators are rethinking possibilities every day. Through it all, Invesco's QQQ ETF has provided investors access to the world of innovation. Be a part of the next 25 years of new ideas by supporting the fund that gives you access to innovative companies. Invesco QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. There are risks when investing in ETFs, including possible loss of money. ETFs' risks are similar to those of stocks. Investments in the tech sector are subject to greater risk and more volatility than more diversified investments. Before investing, carefully read and consider fund investment objectives, risks, charges, expenses, and more in prospectus at Invesco.com. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
This is A.O. Scott. I'm a critic at the New York Times. What I do and what the other critics here do is part of the same project that all of the journalists at the New York Times work on every day to give you clarity and perspective and, above all, a deeper understanding of the world. When you subscribe to the New York Times, it's not just here are the headlines, but here's the way everything fits together. If you'd like to subscribe, please go to nytimes.com/subscribe.
Welcome back to The Choice. Let's talk about the economy for a few minutes. How do Warren's economic plans stack up compared to other candidates' visions for rethinking the economy?
She is at the end, if you're going to sort of put the candidates on a spectrum from those proposing sort of minor tweaks and tinkering with the way things are, she's over at the other end of the spectrum. She really is advocating the idea that we need to make big changes in the way that the government operates in the economy, that we need to tax at much higher levels and to focus that taxation on the wealthy, that we need to provide a much more robust safety net, not just to make sure that everyone has health care, but also that they have, you know, access to child care, that they have access to education from a young age, that they can go to college. It's a really a broad suite. It's a much broader social compact between the government and the American people. And she also has advocated for reforming our systems of governance, for changes to address political corruption, to try and attenuate the influence of money on politics, to break up the power of large corporations. It's really a remarkably sweeping set of prescriptions for economic change.
What did you think of her answers on trade?
Trade is a really interesting issue. It is an issue on which, you know, she has a very populist message. She sounds a lot like Donald Trump, frankly. She says basically, you know, we have a set of values here in America. We want our workers to be paid well. We want to protect the environment. We want to make things and have jobs. And we can't sustain those values if we're just throwing open our borders and trading freely with lower income countries. And so we need to make trade, we need to convince those countries to respect our norms or else exclude them from our markets. It's a very strong line. A lot of economists would argue that America benefits from trade even when it's dealing with lower income nations. But the recent experience, the last few decades, I think, has caused a lot of people to reconsider that idea and to have some sympathy for Warren's view that, you know, at the very least, the distributional effects of trade, meaning our economy may be growing in the aggregate, but a lot of people individually are losing out, and that there's some reason to restrain or at least to condition our interactions with other nations. One thing about trade policy that emerges clearly with Warren is she has a very sophisticated grasp of the regulatory levers at her disposal and the ways in which she might put pressure on other nations, where the current president may have, you know, a clear sense of what he wants, but very little idea of how to get it. Warren at least has a plan for getting there. Whether that plan would work, I don't know, but it's specific and it can be judged.
You know, Elena Kagan wrote this Law Review article in 2000 arguing that the most important power of a modern president is the power over regulation. And I have never seen any other candidate who has as clear a grasp of the power of regulation. She is so versed in the details of it, so willing to talk specifically about how she would use that power. It is so much a part of her agenda. And so there's these two pieces. There's the pie in the sky legislative stuff, and there's the very concrete, tangible stuff where she's telling you, I will pull lever X, I will pull lever Y, and she has the power to do it.
The answer on trade alone was very impressive.
Yeah,
she really understands how trade agreements work.
I mean, you said she knows details on that. She knows details on everything we asked her.
Financial regulation.
Everything we asked her.
And understands the importance of regulation, understands that that's what it is to be president in a way that some of these guys just don't seem to.
Benu, you obviously covered the economy during the 2016 election. How would you compare Senator Warren's proposals to Hillary Clinton's, for instance?
The striking feature of Warren's campaign is how specific she is about the policies she's proposing. She's really created a brand and an image. I have a plan for that, where she, you know, tells you in some detail exactly what she's proposing to do. And exactly how she's going to pay for it. She also speaks with much greater feeling and with much greater conviction about the economic problems that workers face in America. So there's this sense of authentic engagement with the problems and then specific prescriptions for addressing those problems. Those are both things that often felt like they were lacking from Hillary Clinton's campaign.
That's it for Senator Warren. Tomorrow, we'll be talking to Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar. See you there.
The Choice is produced by At Will Media. Mitch Bluestein, Molly Socha, Ashley Taylor, and Rachel Leitner, with help from Michelle Mason. Mixing by Lauren Gardner and original music by Allison Leighton Brown. Special thanks to Tyson Evans from The New York Times. Our executive producers are Will Malnati from At Will Media and Phoebe Lett from The New York Times. Thanks to Francis Ying from the Kaiser Family Foundation, and check out their podcast, What the Health. And finally, we want to hear from you. Rate and review us on the Apple Podcasts app or wherever you listen. It helps more voters find the show.